This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Thursday, September 12, 2019. I'm Caleb Brown. As Democrats running for president prepare to debate again, there is much to like in some of their criminal justice policy proposals. A few candidates have even zeroed in on qualified immunity, a special legal protection for cops, as a key contributor to our broken criminal justice system. Cato's Clark Neely details some of the plans of the Democrats running for president.
Well, I think the issues that the Democratic candidates for president are willing to grapple with are primarily focused on policing, racial disparities, use of force, and to some extent accountability. Those are all very important issues, but I don't think they really go to the very heart of the criminal justice system's pathologies.
So in terms of particular policies that you are supportive of that we see across multiple candidates, what are they?
Well, several of them have flagged qualified immunity as something that they would like to get rid of. Of course, the Cato Institute is leading the campaign to eliminate qualified immunity, which is a judge-made doctrine that makes it very difficult to hold police and other government officials civilly liable for violating people's rights. And so it's a very positive development that several different Democratic presidential candidates, including Castro and Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, have flagged qualified immunity as something that they may well try to get rid of.
So Bernie Sanders has a habit, and I don't know if this is shared by some of his fellow candidates, but he has a habit of talking about policy changes that the president doesn't actually affect that much. How would qualified immunity, I guess, as a president, what can they do to get rid of it?
Yeah, I mean, it's challenging, but the president is not without some ability to influence policy. First and foremost, qualified immunity is a defense that is available to federal officials who are sued for civil rights violations. The president could, at least in theory, require that as a term of employment that federal officials decline to assert qualified immunity as a defense in cases where they would otherwise have the ability to do so. I think that's probably fairly unrealistic, but what the most realistic thing I think the president can do is to make clear that he or she plans to work with Congress to amend the main federal civil rights law, so-called Section 1983, to make clear that it does not include a defense of qualified immunity, so that when people sue a police officer at the state or local level, which is what most civil rights cases involving law enforcement involve, that the federal law that enables that suit to proceed will not include the defense of qualified immunity as it does now.
Several of the candidates want to double, triple, quadruple the funding for the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division. How effective has that office been at enforcing constitutional rights on behalf of people who've had them violated?
I would say DOJ's Civil Rights Division has been hit or miss in terms of its ability to positively influence misconduct at the state and local level. It certainly has had some successes, and it's a very tall order. It's a very tall order to try to fundamentally reform policing practices out in the cities and other areas. So President Trump, of course, has dialed it back significantly. And in terms of federal oversight over local police departments, I think it's that's been to the detriment of civil rights enforcement. So I certainly support the proposal that many Democratic nominees, or not nominees, but candidates have made to ramp up that oversight. But again, I don't think it really goes to the most fundamental pathologies in the criminal justice system, which include over-criminalization and the use of coercive plea bargaining to practically eliminate the criminal jury trial, which has really been arguably the biggest disaster in our system and what has perhaps most facilitated the dynamic of mass incarceration.
So to the extent that candidates are talking about clearing the decks when it comes to things that are technically criminal but should not be criminal, are there a lot of candidates who are taking that up at all?
Well, unfortunately, I think Kamala Harris sort of epitomizes this this undertaking when she says that she plans to eliminate the federal prohibition of marijuana. That's certainly a good idea. It's certainly something that a very significant majority of Americans supports. The federal government, frankly, has no business criminalizing the purely local possession and distribution of marijuana. But the amount of federal enforcement in that area is a drop in the bucket compared to the larger drug war. And so while it would certainly be all to the good to completely eliminate federal enforcement of federal marijuana laws, it wouldn't have a really significant impact on mass incarceration. It would certainly change the lives of a handful of people for the better, and hopefully people who are now serving sentences for purely marijuana-related federal crimes would be released. If that policy were applied retroactively, which it wouldn't have to be, and it might not be, but certainly justice would seem to entail that it would. But again, the amount of federal marijuana enforcement is a very small drop in the bucket, and so if that's really all you're proposing, it's not going to have a significant impact on the overall policy of mass incarceration that we have. Cory Booker has made an allusion to fighting to end the war on drugs, but unfortunately he hasn't really provided any concrete proposals in terms of what exactly he would do. But to have a president that was serious about ending the drug war would be an extraordinary boon to the country. And so hopefully other candidates will be inspired to take up that cause as well.
Pete Buttigieg and Kamala Harris and perhaps some others have floated the idea of establishing some sort of federal standard for the use of force. What does that mean?
Well, the one problem and one of the reasons why there's so many police-involved shootings is that there really is not a consistent standard about when a police officer may or may not use lethal force. And to the extent there is a kind of a judicially created standard, it's extraordinarily forgiving to police officers. Essentially, if you credibly assert that you were in fear for your life or for the life of any bystander, then a police officer can use lethal force. Among the many problems with that standard is the fact that when you are pointing a weapon at somebody, that's one of the most provocative things that you can do to another human being. If you're pointing another weapon, if you're pointing a weapon at another person, then by definition, your safety is at risk. And to say that you were in fear while pointing your weapon at another person is a perfectly reasonable thing to say. So in effect, police can simply create the ability to use lethal force against another person by pointing a weapon at that person. And that will essentially give them a free pass in court. That is hugely problematic. And one of the reasons why it would be helpful to have the kind of national standard on the use of lethal force that it appears some of these candidates are proposing. And it would be absolutely essential that such a standard eliminate this ability that police have to effectively sort of create their own get out of liability free card by simply pointing a weapon at another person and then saying, oh, and while I was, because I was pointing a weapon at this person, I was in fear for my life. That just, that kind of circularity has been an absolute disaster in this area.
You mentioned coercive plea bargaining. Very briefly detail what that is and talk about the extent to which any of these candidates have begun talking about it.
Well, coercive plea bargaining is what happens when prosecutors apply a wide variety of levers that they have to a criminal defendant in an effort to get that person to plead guilty. More than 95% of all criminal convictions today are obtained through plea bargain. In the federal system, it's more than 97%, and that simply wouldn't happen without a great deal of coercion, which has become standard procedure now. So, and this includes things like threatening people with mandatory minimums, locking them up while they're waiting for trial so it's more difficult for them to work with their lawyer, even threatening friends and family members with criminal prosecution if the defendant doesn't accept a plea. So that's what coercive plea bargaining entails, and it's really become sort of the lifeblood of American criminal justice. It's the way that most criminal charges are adjudicated today. And it's really, I think, probably the primary engine driving mass incarceration. And it's completely antithetical to what the Constitution contemplates, which is a public jury trial and significant involvement by citizens, by ordinary citizens in the administration of criminal justice. Elizabeth Warren actually has proposed scaling back course of plea bargaining. She doesn't really have any specifics about how to go about that, but just to even mention it is a very important step. And again, we certainly hope that other candidates pick up that that proposal as well. Elizabeth Warren has mentioned things like open file discovery, which is where prosecutors have to share with defense counsel potentially useful or helpful information, and really any information in their file, including investigative reports and so forth. And she's also mentioned the possibility of an independent prosecutorial integrity unit at the federal level, which would be also very helpful. It's unclear exactly what that would entail, but it might well be something along the lines of what some cities and states have, which is a group of prosecutors that go back and look at convictions that have already been obtained to see whether or not they may have been problematic and whether the person was in fact guilty. Those are sometimes referred to as conviction integrity units. We don't have anything like that at the federal level, and we should.
I note that these people are running for president and not governor. And of course, the federal government does relatively little of the incarcerating that is done in the United States that makes the United States such a massive incarcerator. So with respect to trying to lean on states to get better policies, is there anything appropriately that a president can do?
Well, I do think that states often look to the federal government in a somewhat informal way about what's appropriate and what's not appropriate. They're certainly entitled to go their own way to a certain extent as long as they do so within constitutional bounds. But simply having the U.S. Department of Justice conduct itself in a you know, a more constitutionally respectful way and for example, dialing back on course of plea bargaining, I think there's a very good chance that that would eventually kind of leach down to the state and local levels, because they do, I think, prosecutors at those levels do tend to sort of look to the federal government and to the Department of Justice for what's appropriate and what's not. And then, of course, this is somewhat more contentious or debatable, but there are all kinds of opportunities for the federal government to tie funding to various reforms and changes in policy at the state and local level. That ability to tie funding to policy has certainly been abused in the past. But if there are one area in which even a libertarian might wish to see the federal government exercise the power of the purse to prompt changes in policy, I would think it would be criminal justice reform, and specifically trying to ameliorate mass incarceration.
Clark Neely is Vice President for Criminal Justice at the Cato Institute. Subscribe to the Cato Daily Podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and follow us and suggest show topics on Twitter @CatoPodcast.